Shalom, this is Gamliel Shmalo. 1 Samuel chapter 5 tells the story of the Holy Ark, captive in the land of the Plishtim, the Philistines. It's a strange chapter, almost cartoonish, in which the main protagonist is a wood and gold box that seemingly emanates destructive energy, as if it is loaded with radioactive uranium. The chapter opens with a battle between inanimate holy objects, the Philistine idol Dagon, versus the holy object of the Hebrews, known as Aron Elohim or Aron Hashem. Of course, Arbox wins. Later, as it wreaks destruction on the people of Ashdod, and then Gat, and then Ekron, it is also called the Ark of the God of Israel. In verse 11, for example, the people of Ekron gathered in protest and called out, "Send away the Ark of the God of Israel, and let it go back to its own place, so that it should not kill us." Here and elsewhere, it is clear that they see the Ark as a powerful, perhaps magical object, to be respected and feared. In the next chapter, they will find it so radioactive that they will send it away. Reading this chapter in the 21st century, I find it difficult to understand what positive educational or theological lesson I'm expected to derive from this story. Is the Ark some talisman, some icon? Doesn't this story lead us back to some dark pagan, my idol is greater than your idol, battle of the gods? Alternatively, perhaps the conspiracy theorists on the internet are correct in understanding that the Ark was a radio transmitter dropped off by aliens on Sinai, and powered by a small nuclear reactor, so no wonder why you should only touch its poles. It seems to me that this story is in fact an amazing example of the way the Torah educates Jew and Gentile alike by teaching age-appropriate laws and lessons, gently challenging us to grow by stretching instead of by jumping. The Torah accepts who we are with our imperfect conceptions and institutions, and then tries to refine us. Maimonides refers to this gradual educational method as God's wisdom and wily graciousness, and it can be used to understand the Torah's approach to animal sacrifice, slavery, polygamy, war, and other laws and institutions. You can see more of this in the Guide to the Perplexed 332 and Volume 16 of the Torah Mata Journal. In our story as well, after years in the wilderness and conquest, the people of Israel should have known that the way to God is through righteousness, justice, kindness, and faith, not through superstition and magic. Unfortunately, during the period of the judges, we increasingly assimilated pagan attitudes and behaviors. As in the story of Dan and Micha, idol worship and superstition became common, alongside violence and corruption. In the story of Givah, we found the objectification of women with murderous consequences, while the Kohen was powerless to prevent a fratricidal civil war. Now, our book of Samuel began with a description of a religious leadership that included, quote, worthless men who did not know God. We will see in Yirmiyahu 22 that knowing God is to do what is right and just, to defend the poor and the needy. But Hophni and Pinchas did not know God. They abused their holy office for personal gain, corrupted the temple, and desecrated the name of heaven. Therefore, when they brought the holy ark onto the battlefield in the previous chapter 4, they were not using this object as a vehicle towards inspiration and divine guidance. Instead, years of idolatry, alongside monotheism, had managed to work its way into the hearts and into the Holy of Holies. It managed to corrupt that monotheism itself. They treated our holiest of objects as a talisman, as the best of idols, but as an idol nonetheless. And that's how it was perceived by the Plishtim as well, when they shouted, "Oh no, God has come into the camp," referring not to God himself, but to a golden box as a god. Divorced from its true purpose, used and abused by empty men as a magical instrument, the Ark, too, was revealed to be just a box of wood and gold and fell into the hands of the Plishtim. This was an important lesson for the Jews. Even our holiest of objects, the Holy Ark itself, has no essential power. It may be a religious, educational, visual aid, but only when it is perceived as such. Should it be misperceived as an object of magical power? We need to be disabused of that mistake by showing that it is essentially, truly, just a box of wood and gold. That was the lesson for the Jews in chapter 4. But how would the Plishtim interpret their victory? Certainly not as a statement of monotheism and as a protest against idolatry. They viewed it as a victory of their idol over our idol, and brought the ark into their temple as spoils of war. As the 3rd century Reish Lakish taught in a Midrash, when the Plishtim brought the ark into the temple of Dagon, they said, "Let the vanquished come and serve the victor." At this God responded, You won't be scalded by tepid water, but only with boiling water." The Plishtim did not have our historical or theological background. They were pagans through and through. They could not be expected to embrace or even to understand pure monotheism. The lesson taught to the Jews in chapter 4 would be totally lost on them. The Plishtim, therefore, needed a more age-appropriate lesson for them, that the Ark of the God of the Jews does represent and project a greater power than their idols. And when they mess with the Jews and our holy symbols, they're playing with fire. Although Jews would be expected to understand that our God is totally unlike their gods, the Plishtim would be asked only to stretch a bit to understand, in the words of Yisro, another reformed idolater, quote, "Now I know that Hashem is greater than all the gods." So while to Jews, particularly in the 21st century, chapter 5 might appear to be a bit like a counterproductive, theologically burlesque puppet show, to the Plishtim, these stories were an example of God's wily graciousness, slowly teaching them about the God of the Jews, the God of the gods, while hoping that their hearts should not harden.